This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us from delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next-door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. 27 years Joy has been around. You know, it was the world's first full-time LGBT... Well, actually, then it was GL. I think it was just G and L.
It was gay and lesbian,
gay
actually.
Gay and lesbian. But the world's first full-time queer radio station 27 years ago.
Amazing, amazing. And it is going to
older than some of our listeners.
Very shortly, Macca, it'll be moving to the Victorian Pride Centre, which sits on Fitzroy Street in the middle of the federal seat of McNamara.
Just round the corner. In fact, just down the street from where the previous member for McNamara was, Melbourne Port's Michael Danby's office was. Josh's is in...
He's on Barclay Street in St Kilda.
Barclay or
it's
Ackland?
It's Barclay Street.
Barclay or Ackland?
It's Barclay.
Oh, sorry, I spoke. Okay.
So our next guest, of course,
hey Josh, how are
is
you?
Josh.
It is. Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. It is. It is. You're both kind of right. It's on Barclay officially, but we are on the corner of Ackland Street. So we kind of count ourselves as part of the Ackland Street traders as well. So you both win a point, but Tass sort of wins the bigger point.
Of course, it's right. It's the address is Barclay Street. So you it consider is. Yourself as being part of the Ackland Street Traders Association?
Well, it
that would be very interesting for you.
Well, the Ackland Street Traders Association have had a really hard time, especially during COVID, and some of the businesses, some of those really iconic small businesses in St Kilda have had a really difficult time, and it's not an easy fix because a lot of retail around the country is really struggling. The business models are changing, and unfortunately we're losing some of the sort of local iconic stores, and it's being replaced by some of the big international conglomerates. But there's a great group of shops, and if you do have a chance to go down, you can still get that iconically St Kilda Ackland Street experience. So I do encourage everyone to come down and go and visit and buy some cake or go to one of the restaurants. It is a great place.
Now, Josh, this is sort of a bit of a joke here. We had a listener that says, "I thought a budget debrief was when you took your Kmart jocks off."
Josh is speechless.
I only ever buy Kmart jocks.
Oh. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And look,
This is an unpredictable interview.
Well, look, we are going to talk a bit about the budget. We'll give you a heads up on this. You can think about this for a minute if you like. This is from a regular listener, Mel. I'd love to hear Joss's view on what is going on in Israel. So you can either start off with that, or you can think about it for a minute, and we'll talk about budget. You tell us what you'd like to do.
Sure. I'm in your hands, Mackie. Whatever you'd like.
Oh, that's very dangerous.
You're the interviewer.
Okay, tell us your perspective, as you know, a person of the Jewish faith, an Australian, as to what your feelings are.
Yeah.
With what's going on in Israel and in Gaza.
Well, I think, like everyone, I'm deeply saddened by it. It's a really difficult and awful escalation of violence. What's happening over there, and I hate to see the cycle of violence, and especially children being caught up in the cycle of violence. We've had children in Gaza and in the Palestinian territories, as well as children in Ashkelon and in other Israeli towns being caught up, and it is an absolute tragedy. And unfortunately, I think that the cycle of violence is really strategically benefiting Hamas, which is the organization that oversees the Gaza Strip. And what they are doing is sending over 2,000 rockets into civilian areas, of which they know that Israel will retaliate in a firm way, as we would in Australia if rockets were being sent into Melbourne or Sydney or Canberra. So Hamas is seeking an escalation of violence, and Israel is defending its citizens because Hamas is overwhelming civilian areas with rockets, and it's very difficult to see when the violence is going to end. So I think, like everyone, we hope that we see an end to this violence as quickly as possible. We see an end to people losing their lives, and that some sort of agreement can be reached. But I think that from an Australia's point of view, we designate and prescribe Hamas as a terrorist organisation, and some of their actions in deliberately targeting civilians is provocative and unacceptable, and we would just hope that no more civilians get caught up in this really devastating conflict.
I can hear that you're feeling quite emotional about this, Josh. It's clearly tapping into a personal nerve of some sort.
It is, Taz. No one wants to see any lives lost. It's devastating seeing any life lost, no matter who you are and no matter what your background. It's awful. And as and Australians, we've enjoyed relative peace over the, basically since World War II, we haven't seen really any violence on our home soil, and Australians of all different backgrounds would have friends and family over there experiencing violence and animosity towards their neighbours, and it's devastating. And I really hope it comes to an end. I have family and friends in Israel who have spent much of the last few days in bomb shelters, hearing sirens overhead, and with young kids, worried about where rockets are going to be landing, and I'm sure that there are equally frightening experiences happening in Gaza as well. So it's devastating, and I really hope it ends soon.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that.
Thank you. Now the budget, Josh. You might have heard earlier, I had a bit of a crack at all of current governments and previous governments about aged care.
Yep.
I don't resile from that.
Yep.
This budget, I thought rather amusingly, a number of commentators called it Labor Light. What are your thoughts on this budget? I mean, there are some good initiatives in there, but tell us what you think is a good initiative and what hasn't gone far enough, and what have they missed?
I think that clearly the rhetoric that we've seen dominating conservative politics over the last decade has been around the management and the size of government, and that that they have perpetuated that Labor, in our economic philosophies, have sought to increase the size of spending and investment in the economy, and that the Conservatives have tried to reduce the size of government, the old Reagan philosophy. And they are as far away from that as they've ever been. They are the largest government that has ever existed in Australia. They have spent more than any other government in the history of our nation and have the largest debt and deficit. Now, that's not necessarily a criticism. It's just a fact that the coalition are no longer the hysterical debt and deficit warriors that they once were. They are now showing that the Labor philosophy on economic management of investing in the economy is perhaps more prudent than they once gave credit for. I think that one of the things that I would say that doesn't necessarily go far enough is that there are a lot of assumptions in the budget, right? That the budget is basically predicated on the biggest assumption of them all, which is that the Australians will be vaccinated by the end of the year, fully vaccinated by the end of the year. And as we've seen throughout the entire pandemic, is that unless you have the health response and the health side of everything sorted out, then the economy will always come second to that. And instead of having strong targets, a strong plan about when Australians are going to get vaccinated, how quickly we're going to get vaccinated, we had these sort of weasel words from the government about how the budget made assumptions, but it wasn't government policy, and they tried to walk away from targets because it got them in trouble with that 4 million by the end of March target. So I think that, to be honest, having all of this sort of announcement about what we're going to do in aged care and the NDIS and all of these other parts of the economy is sort of, it will be futile unless the government gets the vaccination rollout correct. And at the moment, about 10% of the population has been vaccinated, which means 90% of Australians are vulnerable to this pandemic, which means that if we do have outbreaks, we're going to be shutting down the economy again. And that's going to be the biggest barrier towards stability and economic stability going into the future. So I think the budget has shifted the political dynamics. There's no doubt about that. But it also is still got some of the real criticisms I have of this government around taking responsibility and also making sure Australians are vaccinated as quickly as possible, because that's the most important thing for our economy.
Can I ask Josh a slight divergence, but in terms of quarantine facilities, we see the Victorian government wants to build a facility out at Mickleham. We have Howard Springs in the Northern Territory, which is run jointly by the Northern Territory and the federal government, or I think it's now going to be run by the Northern Territory. Correct me if I'm wrong.
At the moment it's a collaboration.
Collaboration.
The federal government, yeah.
So does federal Labor, do you believe there should be more purpose-built facilities rather than relying on hotel quarantine?
The answer, Macca, is an overwhelming big yes. And it's not just the Labor Party that has been calling for this. The government issued an internal review into the quarantine system, the Holton Review, which was not commissioned by Labor, it was commissioned by the government. And
They've ignored us.
But yeah, Jane Holton came back with this key recommendation that instead of hotel quarantine, which we've already had to take a number of hotels out of the system because of the ventilation issues, that the government should be building purpose-built quarantine facilities, and Howard Springs is a really good example. I find it a bit frustrating that the government likes to hold up Gladys Berejiklian as the gold standard, when there's no doubt that she has managed to track down small numbers of cases, and I give her absolute credit for that with her health team. But the New South Wales hotel quarantine system has had the most amount of breakouts, which means that we still do run the risk of having lockdowns. Mm. And as we saw over summer in the Northern Beaches, they are the largest and the latest lockdown that we've seen since the Victorian one. So I find it just, it is the only explanation is that it's about politics, that they don't want to take responsibility, because as we saw in the stage four lockdown, when Victoria was coming out of it, the Prime Minister, the Treasurer and the Health Minister weren't taking responsibility. They were sort of throwing political hand grenades via press statements from the sidelines towards the Victorian Labor government, which was deeply unhelpful. So I think that the federal government really needs to be partnering with the states. They really, really should be investing in it, and at the very least collaborating with the states more so, and building these purpose-built facilities. And just quarantine is not the only use for them. If after this pandemic, if we have a whole lot of good accommodation that's in the city but not too far away, then, you know, we have a huge issue with housing waiting lists
and transitional housing.
There are huge requirements, especially, you know, there are women and children being turned away from shelters every single day, who are escaping domestic violence. Let's build more accommodation. I mean, this is not permanent solutions, but it's not going to go to waste. This would be a good investment, and in the scheme of government spending, would be a drop in a very, very big ocean.
Money well spent. I like that. Now, we've got a cheeky question here from a listener, Josh. But I'll start it off. That we saw Josh Frydenberg, looks like he's getting ready for a promotion, delivering this budget and getting ready for his own future.
Yeah.
Will we see our first ever Jewish Prime Minister in the immediate future? Either Josh. Actually, it could be either Josh.
Could be either Josh.
Could be a Josh.
There's a few other Jewish MPs that I'm sure would be deeply offended.
Yeah, but their name's not Josh.
No, exactly.
They Josh for PM. That way, we can be bipartisan. Josh for PM.
Right. Short Josh.
I once was at a function and actually I said this, that you know that maybe he'll be the first Jewish prime minister, and his response was that that's a great way to put the moz on him. So who knows? I think that Morrison's pretty entrenched in that system, and I actually think that that having spent some time with the coalition caucus, that don't ever underestimate Peter Dutton, and he's still hovering around the leadership. He hasn't gone anywhere, and he's not going anywhere. And I actually think COVID really knocked Peter Dutton around, but this week he was back to his fiery best in the parliament. So I think Josh has got some competition with Peter Dutton, maybe less so with Christian Porter.
Now, I've worked out how I can repurpose an old T-shirt that I bought. It was a Joe for PM T-shirt. I just need to add an SH on the end of that.
Yeah. Well, Macca,
adjoining electorates. Come on, Kooyong and McNamara.
Well, no, we have that.
Oh, you got Tim Wilson between you.
No, we have the increasingly marginal Higgins in between us.
Yes, Dr. Katie Allen.
Mm. Yeah. That she's in between Josh and I.
Lucky woman.
Josh and I do disagree on many political things, but I'm going to just let that one go.
Yeah,
through.
I think it's best. Josh.
But no, we do talk and we do off the scenes we do get along quite well. He's been very good to me, and we actually wrote a joint op-ed after the Holocaust Remembrance Day in January, which I was very grateful that he asked me to do. So politics shouldn't be about a clash of personalities, even though I don't agree with many of his ideas and philosophies. I quietly have quite a lot of affection for Josh. Mm.
Katie Allen's very lucky that she's between two progressives.
I last time Labor ran Dr. Fiona, just Fiona McLeod,
yes.
Was a brilliant candidate, and Higgins is a smoky one. It's always one to watch. There is changing demographics, and also I think with climate change being such a weak spot for the government, that Katie's election is going to be closer than they would like, and I think the government is worried about Higgins, and we should. And that is definitely a seat to watch, as all seats are. But that is definitely a seat to watch.
I've noticed there's been a fair bit of activity, ministerial activity, in the seat of Higgins of late.
It's not by accident. They are reading the tea leaves that if they keep having this ridiculous, they keep doing things like what the minister did last week when cancelling a wind farm in Northern Territory because he doesn't believe in renewable energies, Keith Pitt, then the people of Higgins are going to return that sort of ridiculous policy approach with vengeance, I think, and as well as some of the pretty disappointing handling of the scandals that we saw at the earlier of the year. Higgins voters are very switched on, and they watch politics closely. I think that the Prime Minister needs to be very careful, and I'm not surprised that they're spending so much time in Higgins.
Well, don't forget, Katie does have a little secret, not-so-secret weapon, the Higgins 200 Club.
Isn't it like a Higgins 200,000 Club?
Oh,
They're a fundraising machine, but...
Actually, it's time for Katie to come back on. She hasn't been on for a while, Tess.
Yes, it is.
Must ask her.
Mm.
When you pass her in the corridor, ask her.
I shall. She always appreciates it when I give her some suggestions and
some advice. I'm sure she does.
Yeah, as everyone does. Yeah, very good.
Actually,
very
both good. You and her have become media tarts. I see you on Sky all the time. What's going on?
It doesn't matter what media I do. My favourite media is Saturday Magazine.
Oh, there.
Well said. Josh, thank you very much for your time this morning. Always great to hear what you have to say, and thanks for your reflections on the budget and a whole range of other issues as well this morning. So enjoy the rest of your day. And
Thanks again.
We look forward to seeing you in the studio in St Kilda very shortly.
Sounds like a plan.
Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.